Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Oh my God, that took me a second to work out what that was. I thought that it was going to be the F1 theme tune, which, by the way, I have been humming to myself.
Have you? I'm just going to let this play out in its entirety, I think.
No, because we're just going to get copywritten.
I'm just going to fast forward.
Does it end with
not at all, Charles Leclerc? Yes. I'm trying to create an
atmosphere.
What's it called when you imagine something so that it comes true?
The word is on the tip of my tongue.
It's so annoying. It's
manifest.
I was trying to manifest a moment right there.
We should have done that on the you kind of did on the last podcast because it came true on this podcast.
It did.
Yeah.
Hello one and all, and welcome to After the Checkered Flag, our F1 special series here on the Behind the Glass podcast. I'm your co-host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, and alongside me, my fellow F1 co-host, Paul Wallace from Supercars of London.
Hello.
Hello. Well, I mean, welcome, because welcome to my flat.
Yeah.
You're one of the first guests.
Through the door.
Here not on are. Purpose. No. Didn't actually invite you here.
Quite unforeseen circumstances, shall we say.
If you're watching on the Behind the Glass YouTube channel, you'll notice a very different background to our usual backdrop for these episodes. That's because we went to the studio this evening and there was a power cut.
A suspicious power cut right after I said that we needed a change of scenery for the new season.
So it meant that we could not record in the studio and we have relocated to my new apartment. So yes, welcome.
Which is very lovely, ladies and gentlemen. I will give you a tour on my YouTube channel.
Please don't.
And also leak the address.
Wouldn't be the first time you've done either of those things. It has been a little bit stressful getting this sort of scene set up for the recording, but we are now set up and we are ready. Oh my God, to review the first race of the 2022 F1 season. And what a race.
What a way to kick things off. I saw those lights go out and I was like, how good is it to have racing back? Actual racing, not sandbagging, testing, talking about what could be, should be, blah, 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 blah. Those 15 laps was the first time that we got to see the true pace of every single car. And I was so excited. I couldn't even work out what I'd done in the gap that we had between Abu Dhabi and now. I was like, what did I do on the weekends when we didn't have racing?
Just a blur.
Yeah.
Just depressed, sitting, staring out the window going, when will it return?
Watching my heart rate come down.
It was almost too soon, I think, for racing to return. Mm. As the cars are coming around the formation lab and lining up on the grid, I was like, I'm not sure I'm ready for this. Like, it's all just still a bit too raw from Abu Dhabi and that 2021 season.
Did you not see all of the cars come round that final corner and line up and go, they've all got their nose lift up?
Oh, well, I mean, that's one thing we're going to touch on because we have so much to discuss. But moments ago, I was blaring the Italian national anthem because, yes, where's my Ferrari hat?
Forza. Yeah, I know, but in the Italian accent, is it Forza?
No, Forza.
Forza.
I mean, who am I to say? Why am I like, oh, if you want to know how to pronounce Italian, Paul, ask me, the very British man.
Have you checked Ferrari road car prices after that race?
Well, I'm assuming my 360 has gone up by at least 20 grand. But yes, unbelievable scenes as Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz secured a 1-2 finish at the first race of the year, delivered on their pre-season promise. We spoke about it a bit in our last episode, the sort of season preview, but there was still, as you mentioned, a lot of uncertainty. What was actually going to happen when we got to that first race, when the lights went out and the sandbags were theoretically removed? And at least going into this weekend, I think even kind of after qualifying, even though Leclerc had got pole, there was a feeling that actually it was Red Bull and Verstappen that were probably the quicker package. I hadn't really sort of delivered on that. So I at least thought going into the race that it was going to be a close battle and maybe Verstappen on race pace would be able to get the upper hand.
Yeah, well, I predicted in our WhatsApp group that Verstappen would be past Leclerc after corner two. I thought he would go in all guns blazing. I'm world champion. I've got number one on my car. Here are my guns. I'm coming in with my elbows out. Didn't really happen.
Let's be honest, though. You didn't just predict that Verstappen was going to be in the lead.
No. So obviously, since starting this podcast, we've seen Carlos Sainz move to Ferrari. And even then, I said, I'm not entirely sure that's the best move. I am now a full Carlos fan. And I fully thought that Leclerc would buckle under pressure, as we've seen in the past.
Oh, but come on. Okay, so, I mean, this is something that you and Tony, I feel like, have agreed back in January.
No.
Is there any opportunity to get under my skin? You'll take it. And you've realised that by insulting Leclerc, it boils my blood like nothing else.
And I think me and Tony have this like unwritten agreement that any opportunity to wind you up, we'll take it.
There's very few things that do wind me up, but insulting Leclerc or his abilities do. And yes, in the build-up to the race or to the lights out, both Paul and Tony were going in on that. Oh, Leclerc, he'll bin it in the first corner. He's never going to be lead on the end of lap one. And I knew they were just doing it to piss me off, but it worked. And yeah, I think, you know, I sort of half agreed with you that, you know, really, I was expecting Verstappen to get that sort of, you know, that jump on at some point.
Leclerc's race to lose is the way that I saw it. Him lining up on pole, not really knowing the true race pace of the Red Bull, and also like seeing other teams up there, Bottas in with the Mercs, we saw Haas as well. I just kind of felt like we didn't really know what we were going to go into in that first 10 laps, and I just didn't back the Ferrari.
Yeah,
I back Carlos. Just yeah. Not
See, I was the opposite. I think I sided more. I thought Verstappen and the Red Bull package looked like it was going to deliver on race pace better than the Ferrari. We hadn't seen too much in Bahrain, at least, or sorry, around this Grand Prix weekend of Ferrari's race pace. So yeah, I was nervous, but of course excited.
I actually think I got two out of the three correct.
Are you looking at your prediction?
Yeah. Didn't I say Sainz P2, Lewis P3?
I think you might have actually.
But I said,
and I think I laughed you out of the park saying, if Hamilton's on the podium, like.
I did.
You said Verstappen, Sainz, Hamilton, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well done, you. What a dick. Well, yeah, I mean, that's definitely something which we didn't see coming, which we can touch upon as well. Lewis Hamilton somehow ending up on the podium, which, look, okay, fine. 6 months ago, 3 months ago, we would have been like, yeah, duh. But after qualifying was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
They ain't no sandbags.
And it's not just the Mercedes car, it's Mercedes-powered vehicles.
Oh my God, well I text you that right towards the end of the race, before it all really kicked off with the safety car and then various retirements or failures that we're going to come on to. The bottom six positions, and I need to remind myself of the final finishing order, were made up of Mercedes-powered cars. And there's something going on here, because if you look at it, the teams that have most shockingly got this year wrong, Mercedes within a, you know, okay, fine, they're probably a second or 7/10 to a second off the pace. That's a big mess up.
Yeah.
Fine, they're the third fastest team, so they're not like 9th or 10th, but that's a big mess up. McLaren.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I almost don't want to talk about it. It's so upsetting.
No.
I mean, what? They are literally the slowest team on the grid.
They were back there with Williams, and I was thinking, Jesus Christ. I mean, in the pre race, no, pre-season build-up, whatever we did last weekend. I can't remember the official name. I was there going...
Season preview.
Yeah, I was there going, yes, McLaren, Ferrari, up there with Red Bull and Mercedes. And then it just, I mean, you messaged into the group and said, I believe McLaren have not done any qualifying testing. They've just focused on race pace. And I was like, well, what good is that if you're going to qualify at the back? And they obviously didn't even have the race pace.
I actually think it's a disaster. Mm. Like for me, I don't see them coming back from this. Like, okay, so Bahrain is a specific circuit. Yes, you can see other circuits might suit a car. They are the slowest team on the grid. I mean, yeah. Okay, fine. Qualifying wise, Norris was 13th. I think Ricciardo ended up at 18th.
Yes,
but as race pace went, they were consistently 18th and 20th, 17th and 19th. Like they were right at the back with no real show of being able to do anything. And for me, that is going to be very hard for them to overcome, even with a radical development of that car. So shocking, but of course, Mercedes power plant. Mm-hmm. Aston Martin, mm-hmm. equally, okay, fine. Last year, they didn't have an amazing season, but they were stronger than they are proving to be this year.
Yeah.
They've also gone right to the back.
There was a few mistakes early on from Hülkenberg with like a few lock-ups, obviously like dusting off those cobwebs, but what really could Vettel have done more?
No, the pace isn't there.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you've got to look at Williams, as you mentioned. Okay, fine, you know, they had potential, we thought, in Albon, and at times there was some great action, but the pace again was...
you could see after, I think it was like the sixth or seventh corner, that whole cluster at the back, all being backed up by Albon. It was quite funny.
It was crazy.
At least half the grid were behind him.
Well, here is, as I say, that final finishing order, and ignoring the do not finishes, we've got Hülkenberg in 17th, Latifi in 16th, Norris in 15th, Ricciardo in 14th, and Albon in 13th, and Stroll in 12th. So the last positions, those last six, that's all Mercedes power. Then it comes on to Ferrari and what they're now calling Red Bull Racing Power Unit or something. I can't remember what they're calling it. But so it wasn't really spoken about, and I don't know enough about engine tokens and upgrades and what work, if any, had been done to the power units. There's been a lot talked about with Ferrari's power unit upgrades.
Sounds dodgy, considering their history.
Too soon, I think. But yet, clearly, not only have Ferrari and that Red Bull Honda unit taken big steps forward, but I wonder if there's something inherently weird about that Mercedes power unit, which is creating an issue, whether it's ride height or weight or something that's serious. Because it makes no sense. How can it be that all the Mercedes-powered cars have just had an absolute, I'm going to say it, shitter. I mean, you know, a real shitter. Yeah. And Mercedes is the only time I look at and think, they could claw this back. They could. But are they going to really challenge for the championship?
The way that I have looked at it, based on, I think it was Martin Brundle that said it on the Saturday after qualifying, that this race, each team is going to learn so much about the car that by the end of the race, the car that actually raced is going to be outdated because they're going to have so much data and inputs to be able to evolve the car. And I actually wonder whether the likes of Red Bull and Ferrari are looking at this race, given the results that they've just had, being like, hey, we're quite fast. We're actually a lot faster than everyone else. They might look at that to be like, we're pretty happy. We'll make some slow progress and kind of continue with staying at the front of the field. Whereas Mercedes are going to look at that as an absolute disaster, being so far off the pace that their rate of development and almost desire and motivation to get up to the pace could see them make bigger jumps. So that earlier on into the championship than we might expect, fingers crossed, being a Lewis fan, that we see them actually catching up with Ferrari and Red Bull.
I think the rate of development, which is something we mentioned in season preview, it is going to be crazy this year. And I think we do have a chance, you know, if there's going to be such unpredictability like we've seen today, and Mercedes are going to be able to steal a third and a fourth every now and again, then heck, they've got a chance of staying in the hunt. But let's not forget, before the safety car, they were 30-odd seconds off the pace, and they weren't in a position to challenge.
That's exactly it. But is it a case of tortoise and the hare? The hare runs off, but it's unreliable and a fragile piece.
Oh my, I mean, when do we come onto that? Because that's going to be the talking point shortly. But I want to pick up on something you just said very quickly before that.
Go on.
Because you mentioned that they're going to use this as a testbed to learn so much, right? And I think for me, more than the close racing, the biggest thing I learned tires.
Mm.
Did it not feel like complete mayhem and unpredictability around tires?
Well, go on.
No, as I say, not only do they know what tires to pick, people were going on tires and going, "Look, get me off these," and 1,000 stops for each team and driver. The stops weren't that quick. Some with tires were faster. And it was like they were sort of using the tires. I didn't hear too much about tire management, but then it meant they were burning through them so quickly they had to come back in. And I loved it. I'm going to just say, as a viewer, I really enjoyed it, because if that was a one-stop race, which we may have seen last year or the year before, I think it could have been a snorefest.
Mm.
But the Leclerc Verstappen battles.
There's so much to talk about. The more that you say, I feel like this podcast could go on to midnight.
It shouldn't, because Vicky's already glaring at me saying, "I need to get in the kitchen, hurry up." But no, not jesting, it created so many moments of excitement, and especially with the safety car at the end, people diving back in again and different strategies. So I hope the teams aren't going to be classic Formula One teams and go,
figure it out
or complain and say, we need tires that last longer. I think if they can keep some of that uncertainty and tithing, will be brilliant. But you're right, they're going to be figuring it out. There's going to be moments where some teams are going to be doing 4-stop strategies, some teams are going to be doing one. But that's what we want. Mm. I personally loved that.
Yeah.
But that was just one element of what we discovered during this race and this race weekend. So you touched on it. The fact that the cars looked at the front, like they all had their front lift up. In general, how did you feel about seeing the cars on track this weekend?
Oh, epic.
You loved it?
It was going back to what I said in the previous episode, which is kind of like making the jump between PS4 and PS5. So you get the new console and you've got these crisp graphics. I genuinely could feel the new era. I could see it in front of me. I could see the cars going around. And yeah, other than the fact that they look a little bit high on the front, I loved the rear wing. I enjoyed the fact that it seemed like there was more wheel-to-wheel action. There was a lot of commentary around the fact that they were worried that DRS was going to be too powerful, but it didn't seem to be the case. And we got so many moments, not just Leclerc versus Max, but all the way back through the grid, there were some really exciting moments where you were seeing cars overtaking other cars in places that a year ago, 2 years ago, you would never have seen.
I agree with everything you're saying, except one thing. Well, I'm going to say something which maybe will shock you or you'll disagree with.
How many crypto ads were on cars?
I knew you'd pick up on that. I think the cars look slow.
Really?
Do you not think
that's the way that they're filmed and shot in however many frames per second?
No, I actually think they looked a bit big and clunky and slow. I think at times, certain angles, certain shots were impressive. I agree. I love the rear diffuser. I actually love any shot from the rear. I think the cars look mega because they're so sucked into the ground, but these huge gaping holes of air and there's sparks flying. I think from the rear, they look fantastic. And some of the action was good, but even the Leclerc Verstappen battle, I thought it felt like it was at half speed, like in the slower corners.
TV. Were you having problems with buffering? Were you on 4G?
No.
Sky Go?
I just...
Why don't you call up Leclerc?
But they are slower. But they are slower.
Ask him whether it felt slow, all right?
Fundamentally, they are slower in the slow corners. They're heavier. They're bigger. The hubcap, especially if they've got lights or design on them, especially the Alfa Romeo, because that white spinning. Mm. I don't know, like...
There was too much turn one action.
No, just in general, I just thought the cars looked a bit cumbersome.
Go and watch F3 and then watch F1.
Watch F2 and then watch F1. I don't know if it would be quite as different as it used to be. And let's not forget, they are 2-3 seconds off the pace from last year. That is considerable. That is basically F1 to F2.
Yeah,
last year, F2 weren't that far off.
I don't think our eyes would be able to pick up a 2-second difference in those cars. Obviously, yours have.
Well, I'll tell you what, but it's Formula One. They looked mega. I love the way the cars look. Mm. And I do like this new era. You're right. The front ride height's a bit odd and takes a little bit getting used to. But in general, I liked it. I just thought they looked a bit clunky.
I like the fact that each car is distinctively different.
It's totally unique.
The side pods, the cooling systems. It's nice to see different designs on the cars so that it's not just like, oh, that's a AlphaTauri because of delivery.
Yeah.
Like every car looks different,
which is quite cool
to see how each team's interpreted the new regulations.
Absolutely. And I think as well, we're seeing characteristics. So the Red Bull clearly insane the straight line. Oh my God. Yeah. Terrifying. The Ferrari seems like a sort of all round package.
Yeah.
I think Mercedes would have been pleased with their race pace. Okay, fine. They were 30 seconds off the Red Bulls and the Ferraris at one stage, but actually I think they'll be fairly happy with that, weirdly enough. Further down the field, as we've spoken about, McLaren and Aston Martin shockers, Haas delivering on Magnussen's promise. So I think as a whole, there's lots to be positive about with 2022. It was just the start. I mean, next weekend, we go to Jeddah. I mean, that's going to be interesting because we all know what that race was like last year. And I was there. But, you know, so we've got a long way to go until we really figure out what this season's going to look like. True pecking order. The rate development teams being able to catch up. I would assume the beast that Mercedes is, they will essentially launch a B car by the time we get to Barcelona.
Yeah.
Like, I think we've got a tough time for them for the first five, six races of the year. But by the time we get to the European season, I think they're
going
to be...
I think going back to what you were talking about with the pit stops and the way that the tyres kind of just faded away and drivers just using 100% of the tyres without really thinking about tyre management, the one thing that I picked up on, again, it was either Crofty or probably was Martin Brundle, because the way that they were talking about how the pit stops, they were able to predict that you were going to lose 20, 25 seconds per pit stop. Now they're saying you almost have to cool the car down on the in-lap. Then you've got to take into consideration that your pit stop might be a little bit slower. And then your out-lap, you're not getting any heat into the tires. So there's such a huge variation now in each pit stop that the strategies are going to be so hard to calculate that actually I think this year we're going to see a lot of teams getting strategies wrong and therefore provide some really exciting on-track battles and some real sort of like big talking points.
Absolutely. You're so right, because there was so much... dropping his drink in his lap. So much inconsistency with the time that pit stops took, from 2.3 seconds up to 4.8. You know, yeah, outlaps, that amazing scene of everyone really pussyfooting around on their tyres on the outlap, which was so good to see.
Well, Lewis on the hards was just like uncontrollable.
Straight on, like, ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. So,
drove like a true AMG.
I hope that these things, yes, the teams get on top of it, but remain elements of uncertainty and excitement, because, you know, in a new era, you want that, but you don't want it to be so figured out that it disappears. So let's wait and see. But we can't, or I can't necessarily breathe a sigh of relief and go, yes, Leclerc's champion, it's done. Because, you know, firstly, first race curse. I think the last 4 years, 5 years maybe, winner of the first race has not won the championship. So, woohoo! But also so much still to happen. Before we do our traditional, because if you haven't listened to this podcast before, maybe you're new to F1 after Drive to Survive, maybe you're just new to the After the Checkered Flag series here on the podcast. What we tend to do is review each driver's race kind of in reverse order. So we look at the finishing order, we go from last to first, and just kind of slightly mention some drivers we don't talk a lot about. And if there's a big drama, sometimes we don't do that at all, we just talk about drama. And actually, in honor of that, I wanted to talk about Max versus Charles before we do the running order. Because, yes, over here, Mr. I love you, Charles. I've got a lot I want to say. And can I just clarify very quickly, because I know a lot of you that have followed Seen Through Glass for years on all different social media platforms will know that I am a Hamilton fan. I continue to be a Lewis Hamilton fan, always have been. I, when it comes to Formula One, support drivers. That's always been the case for me.
Me too.
And I think most people do. When it comes to teams, I flip and vary depending on where the driver is, the drivers are and where the driver. So Ferrari was my first love, and as you all know, is my love in terms of road cars. And I've always appreciated the team. But when Alonso was there, I wasn't that keen on Ferrari. When Kimi Raikkonen was facing Lewis Hamilton, I wasn't that keen on Ferrari. But the minute Leclerc came in and joined Ferrari, I have been saying over and over again, I am back on board Forza Ferrari. And I still want Hamilton to win the championship this year, of course. But give my man
as many wins as possible.
Yes,
just without winning the world championship.
No, give him a championship winning car, and I'm going to come out and say, I think he's going to be near on unbeatable. I'm just going to come out and say it, because look at his build up to Formula One. He won everything straight away. Like, not just one, like, I won three races. Like, he just demolished everyone and everything.
There was a few Formula One races that I attended when Leclerc was in F2, and he was like the standout golden child. That was the first time that I actually even recognized that there were support races on an F1 weekend.
Oh, this guy's kind of good.
Yeah.
And you can tell by his smile. Since Saturday more, he can't stop smiling. In all the interviews, you can just see his face is like, oh shit, it's happening. I'm with you. There are some chinks in the armor. I watch him with the sort of, you know, nervous energy thinking.
Watching from behind the sofa. Yeah, when he's leading a Grand Prix, you're kind of like peeking from the back of the sofa.
He could be it, but I thought today we saw the Leclerc that I've had faith in, the Leclerc I need, the Leclerc I want to win a championship. And if Hamilton and Mercedes aren't going to be able to catch up and fight, the guy that I'm fully behind, because head to head with Verstappen, he gave nothing away. Mm. We're going to come on and talk about what we both agreed was disastrous tactics and racecraft from Verstappen. Mm. We're not Verstappen haters.
No.
But wait until we discuss it. But Leclerc, it was a masterclass.
Faultless. From start to finish.
Safety car restart, that duel with Verstappen, he kept his head cool, knew where to position his car. On that very first duel going down to turn four, that little turn to the inside, that little twitch, just to say to Max, watch out, mate. Like, you're not lunging in here.
Yeah,
like,
watch out. I'm out of control.
Which we could argue Hamilton didn't do enough of last year. And even Hamilton's come out and said, I need to be more aggressive. Mm. Like, I need to get my elbows out more. And he was being too gentlemanly at times and letting Verstappen run it away with it.
But now the grid have seen what Max is capable of doing. Maybe they've adjusted their race. And I think they said it after Brazil, didn't they?
Yeah.
A lot of drivers said, we're going to drive differently now, which has raised the stakes. It's exciting.
And I think that's what Charles were doing. I think he was just giving them a little like, heads up, bro.
Yeah, yeah. Traction's fully off, guys.
We mustn't forget these two have been racing for years and years. Their sort of single-seater career went in slightly different ways. And of course, Max has been in Formula One now for donkeys years. But they've known each other for a long time and there's some amazing clips of them online. But let's talk about Max for a second. Mm.
Because I've just said that he's a vet in Formula One, but he didn't drive like it that
way. I'm glad you said it. Just to clarify once again, we are not Verstappen haters. We are Hamilton fans. We've said it many times before. And we didn't like Verstappen at many points last year, but he was a worthy champion and we've applauded him many times.
Going back to drivers versus teams, I actually think I've got something against Red Bull because I don't like their drink. Because
I don't like Christian Horner, which I don't.
Yeah, no. But like anyone attached to the Red Bull team, I kind of feel like, huh? Because I didn't really like Vettel when he was in the Red Bull car.
Sure.
Didn't really like, did Carlos Sainz?
Toro Rosso, yeah.
Like every time I saw that Red Bull livery on a car, I just kind of, I kind of like turned my back on whoever was driving that car. And I've got nothing against Verstappen as a driver and as a person. I mean, we kind of have talked about various moments last season where we had moments with him. And my fiance, I can't even say girlfriend now because she'll kill me, loves Max Verstappen.
So does my wife, which is why we've closed the doors so she can't hear the next part, because there was some tete-a-tetes, I would say, watching the race today.
Mm, yeah, so I kind of picked up on it the moment that Leclerc got the position back after the turn one lunge, which, by the way, was classic Max. Super ballsy from miles back. Love to see it. But when Leclerc got the position back after the second DRS thing, I was like, oh, so all he has to do next time round is not overtake him down the home start finish straight, line him up for the next DRS straight, and he's got the position. And then all of a sudden you can tire management, you can calm down a little bit and not necessarily have to worry about being overtaken again. What did he do? The same move as the one before. Next lap, what did he do? The same move as the one before. And I was like,
it was so surprising because, I mean, we are not racing drivers.
Yeah.
What's he doing? We're definitely not even experts. But if we're sitting there being like, mate, surely if you just waited and sat behind Leclerc through turn one and two, by the time you get to turn four, you're going to have a pretty good run on the guy. Yeah. And we saw other drivers doing it fairly effectively.
Yeah.
And it seemed quite surprising that Max wasn't thinking of that and was making the same mistake for three or four laps in a row, clearly getting frustrated by it, so much so to the point that he then does a massive lockup
and ruins his tyres.
Yeah. And it came across as being very unintelligent racing at that point. Now, I like to think.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Ryan Leclerc had the pace advantage anyway.
I think you're right.
And I think Max saw that, like, okay, I've got this moment. I've got to do it. Like, I just got to get past him. Mm. Like, if I get past him, I can control it. I just got to get past him.
I wonder if the second straight is, obviously it's not as long as the first straight, but maybe he thought he wouldn't have got the job done on the second straight. So he needed to make that move into turn one.
I think he thought, I've got such a straight line speed advantage. This is where I'm going to be able to do it. But after two failed attempts, at least try something different on the third. Like, yeah. And as I said, we saw so many other drivers doing this. And if I'm critical of Max, I would say that this tends to be his tendency, which can sometimes reap big rewards for him, where he's just like all in straight away, just get the move done.
Yeah, like
I'm coming through, elbows out.
The classic Senna quote, there's a gap, I'm going to go for it.
Yeah, 100%, which has worked for him time and time again. Hey, he's a world champion now. So I get that. But at the same time, if you look at many other drivers, Alonso, Button, I'm thinking of people from the previous eras, Weber, of course, Hamilton, Rosberg, who in the field nowadays, Ricciardo maybe, I don't know, really size up their component and will use laps to judge where the weakness is, will try and overtake them. But Max is just kind of like, no, it's just going to get past.
Yeah.
And
so quite a one-dimensional
and
style of driving.
Charles was like, all right, mate, cool.
Carry on.
Like, I think the second and third time, Charles was waiting for him to lunge. Yeah, like, he was a bit like, come on, mate.
Yeah, so that he knew that he could get the best exit out of turn two.
And then we hear on the radio a surprisingly irate Max. Like, I think after qualifying, he seemed fairly pissed off. Mm-hmm. I think his mood was, everyone was picking up on it in the paddock. He didn't seem very content. He went into the race again, seeming a bit off, not particularly chirpsy. Like, this is the world, you're world champion now, mate. Like, it's the first race of the year. Like, everyone else is in high spirits. And then over the radio, those commands like, I'm never going to do such a slow out lap again. I'm never listening to you again. This is ridiculous.
It's like, well, at one point, I think he said, what the F is this?
And this is the guy who got you to a world championship last year, mate. So just hold your breath for 2 seconds.
And also, like, you've just signed a massively long contract. Like,
he just was all a bit like, dude, like, it's the first race of the year. I love his competitive attitude. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. The bits I like about Verstappen is his balls to the wall style nature at times. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some of the moves that he can pull, his raw pace, and the fact that he's just a bit petulant and be like, yeah, let's go for it.
No BS.
No BS. But at the same time, dude, come on. Like, and then obviously when things started to go wrong, he was flapping. He was flapping. And, you know, hey, look, we've heard Hamilton, we've heard Ricciardo, we've heard a lot of the great drivers flap when stuff goes downhill.
I think elite athletes and non-elite athletes have a fair amount of moaning.
But I don't know. I wasn't expecting a different Verstappen at all. I was just surprised to hear what we heard from him and see what we saw from him in this first race. And if we go back to Bahrain last year, we now know that a similar sort of mistake or similar mentality lost him that race. Mm. You know, the move around Hamilton, where he gave the position back to Hamilton, everyone analysed and said that was the worst place to give the position back. Like, he lost. So, I don't know. Like, I don't think the guy has to change. He's won a world championship. I haven't. I'm not going to tell him how to go driving. But there were just moments where if I was Charles Leclerc, I'd be going, oh, sick. Like, yeah. I've got this guy covered. Like,
if this is what I've got to deal with, I can deal with this all day long.
Literally. That's, for me, as a Leclerc fan and as a Hamilton fan, I was like, oh, sick. Like, we're good. Because I went into that race being like, once Verstappen's on it, I'm a bit worried about Charlie. Like, it's been a while since he's been right at the thick of it.
I back Verstappen to get Leclerc into the first corner and then just drive off.
Yeah.
Well, I was more...
That didn't happen. So, yeah, of course, we have to touch on the fact that, you know, their double retirement for Red Bull, fairly shocking. Mm. Now, in testing, Perez's car, at least, wasn't that reliable. So there is a potential that this is going to be a very fast but slightly fragile car from Red Bull.
Saying it's a fuel pump.
Super weird fuel pump issue, which... is an FIA part, and I've already seen the conspiracy theories going mad, so maybe by the time this goes out, people are going to be all in on the conspiracy theories.
I love a conspiracy
theory. Oh, yes. But let's not forget they've switched now to this synthetic fuel or sort of parts of the E10, like we get the pumps here in the UK, and there were a lot of questions. Did you just say, did something go weird? Oh, that's my vehicle tracker. Slightly worried.
Your car is on the move.
I'm going to say vehicle safe. Vicky!
Is the RS6 outside?
Is the RS6 outside? I just got a notification from my tracker saying that it's disappeared.
You did say that it's on a bit of a delay, but that's quite...
It is on a bit of delay.
It's quite a large delay.
Is it here? Okay. I mean, she hasn't come running in, like flapping her eyes, like Team America style. It's still here. Okay, I'm getting a thumbs up. The car's still here. Phew. But yeah, so there was a lot of talk before the race that E10 fuel may sort of cause some issues. We'll wait and find out, but pretty shocking for a double retirement. Mm. Very exciting in those final few laps.
Yeah.
Without the issues, do you think Verstappen would have got Leclerc?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No.
At that point of the race...
He
definitely would have got a podium. But at that point of the race, I was like, okay, I'm pretty happy that Leclerc's got
backing it, yeah.
Okay, so... Now we've got that out of the way. Let's review some drivers' races.
Yeah, we've got the slagging Verstappen off out of the way.
No, and I promise that's not the year we're set for, but
it's how we feel. We've said we're going to remain as unbiased as possible.
Yeah, we were just analysing.
However, when someone like Verstappen drives like that,
we'll call him out on it.
Everyone else drove perfectly.
And Max, if you want to come on this podcast and defend yourself,
yeah, we'll fly to Monaco. We'll fly to Monaco. We'll do a podcast.
Not going to happen.
Why?
I bet he goes like, oh, those behind the glass guys are bellends.
No. He runs in Vaporflies. I've got a pair of Vaporflies too. Like we could go running buddies.
Don't get nerdy about running. So Pierre Gasly, AlphaTauri, obviously had an unfortunate fire. Big fire, actually. First time we've seen one in a while.
It was a big fire.
But was running strongly. He's running in the points for most of the race, I think. Yeah. AlphaTauri look solidly midfield at the moment. Gasly, I think, I would hope later in the year might be able to pull out a few results, but just solid.
At least they don't have a Merc engine.
Literally. Because as we mentioned, Hülkenberg, Latifi, Norris, Ricciardo, Albon, Stroll are basically also Rans. You know, Albon did have that very strong qualifying, I think, in the grand scheme of things. I saw some great tweets being like, maybe George Russell isn't that special because Albon's just come back from a year off and has also outqualified Latifi by a second. So yeah, I think maybe that's what's being highlighted. Firstly, let's not forget Albon is a fantastic driver and maybe on a similar level as George Russell. If we judge, I think, by the junior series, I think we can suggest that Albon was a championship contender in Russell's
he got a Red Bull seat before Russell got a Merc.
Yeah, so you know, so we shouldn't knock Albon at all, but it's a similar sort of, you know, I think performance difference between those two. Ricciardo finishing ahead of Norris, I think, was just, I don't even know how that happened, if I'm honest.
I don't think it's necessary to comment. It's just sad.
It's
just
really actually sad. Really, because the trajectory of McLaren at the end of last year. Zach Brown, Ricciardo, Norris, victories, podiums. They got the Indy car. They got the Extreme. I was like, wow, let's go and buy it. Actually, let's not. And I just don't see them coming back from this. I will eat something I don't like. I don't know what. I'll have a Red Bull.
Okay.
If I'll have a Red Bull if McLaren,
you wild man,
can get it back from here.
There's a conspiracy that I'm going to drop in now. You know, last year I came up with that Aston Martin safety car theory, which actually kind of proved to be more real. What if this entire season is for Netflix?
Oh, well, you know, you're not the first people to say that, but
episode one, McLaren at the back. Disastrous, but by the end of the season they've come and won the world championship, the constructors championship, and everyone is popping bottles in Woking.
If that happens,
I'll leave the sport.
Yep.
I don't, I'm not even in the sport, no, and I'll leave it.
Dramatic headline. Yeah. Random commentator.
But I was watching like the mid part of this race going, huh, after the 15 laps, just to see the cars dynamically moving, seeing some of them follow, then the pits, you're thinking, oh, this is going to be really, really exciting. And then it kind of just like faded into another Formula One race that everything just started to get stretched out. And then boom, safety car, and I'm thinking, oh, Netflix, you sneaky buggers.
You know what I can say? I said it to Vicky at the time. I was like, if Verstappen wins this, I'm going to go in on the tweet of like, so that's how Verstappen wins races, eh? Yeah, calls his mates to the FIA, gets a safety car out.
However, karma.
Yeah. Everyone was a little bit of karma this race. But, so yeah, I mean, all those also-rans, I don't have anything really to say. No. Like, the McLaren thing just cuts me so deep. Mm. So let's move on. Mick Schumacher, This is going to be a tough one for me, because we all thought last year's Haas disaster. Mm. All Mick needs to do, keep his head down,
finish races,
bring the car home.
Laps under his belt.
So this year, suddenly, according to Kevin Magnussen, Haas got a pretty good car. According to Mick Schumacher, no, they don't. I'm worried for Mick now because, you know, he didn't have the most convincing ride up to F1, but he did win championships. He obviously only had Mazepin to pace himself against last year, and he beat Mazepin, not necessarily massively convincingly, but he did beat him. And Magnussen, who's been away from the sport for a year, did one day of testing, has walked in, qualifies the car in top 10, finishes P5, looks like an amazing sort of, you know, dynamic driver. And Mick Schumacher is basically floundering out of the points for most of the race. I mean, he finishes here 16 seconds, 17 seconds behind Magnussen when there are only five laps of safety car racing. Yeah, I'm concerned for Mick and what this will do for him, because I think Magnussen's going to walk all over him. And what does that say for Schumacher's career?
Yeah.
Not a lot. Mm. A shame, but...
Other than he is still incredibly new to the sport, and we have to remember that...
No.
No?
Nah. He's had a year under his belt.
Yeah, but and I mean, come on.
Okay, prime example, Guan Yu Zhou.
Yeah.
Or Zhou Guan Yu.
Yeah, that was confusing.
Yeah, so Sam at my studio, Kings of the Wild Frontier, who used to be Danny Rick's trainer, Carlos Sainz trainer, blah, blah, has been training Zhou for...
Let me just pick up all of these names off the floor.
Yes. Just dropping them for a sec. Kings of the Wild Frontier. Great place. He's been in footage on the main channel. Anyway, long story short. So, Guan Yu Zhou has been around for a long time in and around Duke of London in the studio and coming for training. And I'm pretty sure in Formula 2 they called him Guan Yu Zhou. And, maybe I shouldn't say this next bit. Anyway, I always think of him as Guan Yu Zhou. Mm. And then suddenly he turns up on F1 and I was like, oh, Zhou Guan Yu. Yeah. But then his name is Zhou on the... Anyway, I'm going to go with Guan Yu Zhou for now.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do. I think he had an impressive debut as a rookie. That's his first ever race against Bottas, proven race winner in a car that was faster than they expected in a new era, new season. Okay, fine. He's finished 23 to 16... 7 seconds off Bottas again after safety car period, and he's 10th, where Bottas is 6th, but that's points on a debut. He was in the action. We saw him getting his elbows out. And so for Mick Schumacher, I don't think there's any excuses. You can be a rookie and be competitive and make an impact. And Leclerc did it at Sauber, Alonso did it at Minardi, Ocon did it at Force India. Like there's plenty of stories of rookies making an impact. And for me, Mick needs to get on that Magnussen pace. He should be at the same pace as Magnussen straight away. If he's going to be anything.
Come on then, Mick. Hurry up. If you're watching, pick it up.
So
I'll back you if he won't.
Moving on. 10th, as I mentioned, Guan Yu Zhou, Zhou Guan Yu, in the beautiful...
Zhou Guan Yu. Just have to like actually get used to saying that, because...
I'll say this bit.
It just doesn't roll off your tongue,
I'll tell you something afterwards, and then you'll remember it.
Just whisper it into the mic.
Well, no, but just think of it as Zhou, but with a ZH. Zhou.
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 And if you just say Zhou, then you
can I just say Zhou?
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. I'll tell you the bit.
Okay.
Anyway, so 10th, solid, absolutely beautiful. Alfa Romeo, fantastic. Fernando Alonso, P9, solid, just like the AlphaTauri, solid. Yeah. You know, sure, is what it is. Yuki Tsunoda, solid, AlphaTauri, P8, not got a lot to say. Esteban Ocon, 7th.
This is great content, P9. Isn't it?
P7, sorry, Alpine. Like, but no, genuinely, that midfield group, because also, let's face it, without the retirements that we had, they are right at the tail end of the point. Yeah. And we did see a lot of action. Can I just say one thing quickly? I thought the TV direction for this race was atrocious.
Full on disaster.
I saw more Alfa Romeo Williams battles than when Hamilton was chasing down Perez. You know, I've got Verstappen climbing out of a car when there's action for the lead of the race.
There was a lot of times I had to refer back to what was going on the left to see whether people were in the DRS zone, because it was like they were kind of focusing on battles that didn't need...
Yeah.
It was strange.
And when the Leclerc-Verstappen pit stops were happening, where was our driver tracker map to know where Verstappen was to the... Like, I was like, come on! So TV direction, disaster. So I feel like I saw a lot of this midfield action. Wasn't particularly excited by most of it.
Yeah.
And all the results, I think, are solid. I think Alpine will be happy. Double points finish, 7th and 9th. AlphaTauri, without that Gasly retirement, I think would have done well. Yeah, so like they've all performed well. Bottas... I think driver of the weekend, probably.
Yeah,
P6 he came away with.
I mean, a terrible start.
Terrible start. But classic Bottas.
Classic Bottas is literally that like meme of him holding the beard. Traditions.
Literally, like, classic Bottas. But pulled it back. P6. And he must be ecstatic. Yeah, I think he must be. Thank God.
Considering their testing.
Oh, their testing was a disaster.
We were talking to be like, well, he's going to be building a team around him. Maybe it's a 5 to 10 year plan. Boom, P6.
Legend. K-Mag, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I say Bottas is a driver of the weekend. It's probably got to be Magnussen. Mm. If you're Kevin Magnussen, are you just not on the high of a lifetime right now? Are you not just thinking, this is the... I'm just living my best life.
I think it will be a case of... He obviously lost out to his seat. Lost out his seat to...
Mazepin.
Mazepin, and just kind of got booted out because of the money. And now coming back, he will be going to bed being like, look at me now.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's like no F's given.
Yeah, he'll be so pumped. I think he was going into that race with really not that much to lose. Actually, like, he only had stuff to gain because the car was so bad last year. Even if he'd bought that car home in like P14, they'd be like, oh, that was a pretty good weekend for Haas.
Literally, he is there just to have fun.
Yeah.
If I was him, and I think he said as much, and he seems like it, he's a different Magnussen in interviews.
Yeah.
He's just like...
No pressure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I never thought I was going to be back in Formula One. Like, I didn't think that was going to happen. And I'm back at the house and I'm P5. Like, what a legend. Yeah. Like, honestly, I mean, proper hero. Go on, K-Man.
Let's hope he just continues to get into the points.
And it shows, actually, and we were having this slight argument with Tony, that real driver, like properly talented drivers can deliver, can turn up and deliver. And it does make the difference in the car. And unfortunately, just to bash Mick again, even though I had such hopes for Mick.
I'm still with you,
come
Mick.
Come on, Mick, you can do it.
Come on.
Point proven, you know, maybe last year Haas would have delivered some slightly better results if they had Magnussen in the car.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, there is a difference between a great driver and a good driver. And all these Formula 1 drivers are good, 100%. But Magnussen has just proven what a theoretically great job. And he's probably not even on the level, I don't think, of a Leclerc, of a Sainz, of a Norris, of a Verstappen, of a Hamilton, of an Alonso. Anyway, fantastic.
I actually think there was a conversation at one point that I had with a few, shall we say, elite racing drivers, like Le Mans drivers. Yeah. And actually, Jensen Button was in the conversation. Oh. Sorry, I'll just pick that name off. And they said Hülkenberg was like one of the most naturally... fastest drivers that has just never had the opportunity of getting into the car. But then weird to think that K-Mag got in that car and did that, and Hülkenberg got in. Does that prove how bad the Aston is?
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, the car's a huge part of it, as we've always known. This is Formula One; it's a team sport. It's about building the quickest car and putting the quickest driver in that car. And Hamilton is not going to win a race in an Aston Martin this year. Like, Hamilton's not going to win a race in an Alpine. It's not going to happen. But those drivers can bring additional performance to cars, can get the most out of a car, and over years can hopefully move a car forward up the grid. That's what we see. But yeah, you're kidding yourself if you're sitting here going, it's all down to the driver. It's not. But Magnussen clearly can eke out performance that a Schumacher can't.
Yeah.
Mick Schumacher. So before I saw you getting so, you're like, oh, here's my moment.
Yes.
Trash, Michael.
Cheat.
P4, Georgie Russell. We have to say that because who? I think it was Will Buxton.
It was Georgie Russell.
Solid recovery from George. I think he was upset with his qualifying P9, messed up his tire preparation. The internet went to town ripping him apart.
Perfect opportunity in the grand scheme of how much he's been elevated up onto a pedestal. The golden child of Mercedes finally getting his seat. Obviously, he had that Bahrain moment when Lewis tested positive and he should like kind of got like... his win stripped away from him.
Yeah, should have won the race.
I bet a little bit heart-wrenching for those that were George Russell fans. But I think he was kind of always setting himself up to this sort of huge amount of pressure. And comparing that to a different sport, if you look at how the Brits and the media would hype Wimbledon, waiting for another British tennis player to bring the Wimbledon men's championship more than women's championship home. And I remember listening to interviews with like Tim Henman being like, just the pressure is insane going into that weekend, that is just too hard, too much to handle. The same with the England football team, the amount of media hype that builds up to these big tournaments, it's almost too hard to deliver. And I think with George, we probably did see a little crack considering the age that he's at and the opportunity that he has. He's probably come into that realization to be like, oh my God, it all comes down to this. And he's probably had quite a lot in his brain whilst he's doing that qualifying lap.
Yeah, I think that he just messed up his preparation. I wonder, I would hope the pressure didn't get to him like that. I just think he just messed it up. Like we've seen all different drivers get it wrong over time. I think there's more to come from Russell this year. Mm. I think we'll see him get closer and closer to Lewis. I think it was actually a fairly solid first race.
Yeah.
You know, he's right there. He's P4. Yeah. That's where Mercedes need him and want him to be. He finishes a couple of seconds behind Hamilton.
Yeah.
We don't know what the management was between those two. Hamilton did look like he had the better pace in the race, and he did, of course, in qualifying. But I think they will be fairly evenly matched. And if they're going to try and push that team forward, this is what they need. Because there we are. The Red Bulls have a retirement. They're third and fourth.
Yeah.
They're nailing those points. And so if by the European season they can suddenly get on their pace, at least they're both there scoring points for the constructors. So I think a solid job for him and he'll be happy.
He'll definitely be happy after today.
Probably not as happy as Lewis Hamilton, because the smile on that man's face on that. He was like, guys, what's this? Shout, what's up, man, Carlos?
Great to see you here.
This grape juice tastes like crap, huh? Like, you know, let's get some champagne later. I think he was so ecstatic with what had happened. Because for sure, as we say, middle of the race, 30 odd seconds off the pace, sort of looked like the wrong call to go on the hard tyres. There were moments at the start where he looked a bit racy, whether they were burning out their tyres or what it was, but after about four or five laps, they seemed to drop back. Yeah, they seemed to drop back. So solid for him. Tony, the ultimate Lewis Hamilton fan, was straight in the WhatsApp, P3 for Lewis in the slowest car on the grid, ultimate GOAT. Well, it wasn't the slowest car on the grid.
I don't actually think... He's not a Lewis Hamilton fan, and he's a champion of his driving ability. He sees him as the greatest of all time as a driver. I wouldn't class him as a Lewis Hamilton fan.
No, fair. He likes that he's the best, but therefore
he'll probably argue with us a lot to say that he's not a fan of Lewis.
But he also won't therefore admit when Lewis isn't.
Yes, true.
Because, you know, he's so blinkered.
He's very biased.
Totally biased and blinkered. Yeah. Lewis, oh, he's fine. Lewis is great. Like, there's a chance he might get this wrong. But yeah, so solid result for Lewis. Great for him.
I think he probably saw like the role reversal kind of from what he experienced in Abu Dhabi to then kind of just be not getting a result from this weekend as such. To then see the problems with the Red Bull after the safety car, going past Verstappen, seeing Perez spin in front of him. He probably got to the end of that race to be like, oh my God, I've made it onto the podium where I shouldn't really have been here.
He was P5, wasn't he? He was a solid P5. And I think, again, they probably would have been fairly happy with that. They're definitely the third fastest team.
Yes.
That was the question I think we all had, even after qualifying, but going into this weekend, is where do Mercedes really sit? Mm. Are they the third fastest team, or actually have Haas, Alfa Romeo and that lot, are they going to threaten them? Where I think, whilst we might have a few crazy Q3s where we get some people ahead of the Mercedes in this first five races. I think fundamentally that they are the third fastest team. Well, that was a tongue twister. So that leaves us with our top two. We've already spoken about Leclerc quite a lot. I say absolutely fantastic drive. Carlos Sainz, he talked down his weekend quite a lot. Oh, tough weekend for me, guys, blah, blah. But I mean, he's there, P2. And I liked his radio message saying, if a bad weekend is P2, he'll take it. The thing I love about science is that mentality. We saw it in the McLaren years. We're seeing it at Ferrari. The man is a machine. Mm. He is on a mission. He will work his butt off.
He's the points collector.
I think Leclerc might be the relationship guy. Like they're like, hey, we're all mates. Yeah, like, I love you, bro. Like, what's going on? Like, I speak in 55 languages. Like, well, science is like, tell me where my understeer is. Like, you know, like, so they're going to do great things for that team. I cannot wait for that battle. Because at the moment, they're all matey-matey. It's going to get vicious. Like, those two will end up fighting on track a lot.
Oh, yeah. It's probably scripted into Netflix.
Don't start. But yeah, you know, again, without the retirement, I think he was fairly solid P3. Seemed like he had Perez under control.
Yeah, which
is what Ferrari need from him.
Do you know what? There was a moment in the race, especially when Leclerc was battling with Verstappen, but then you had Sainz and Perez. There was a moment where I was looking over at the left at the graphics. I was looking at what was happening on track. And I was actually quite happy that Lewis wasn't there. I was like, oh, I can actually...
Bit different.
Yeah, I can actually... I can get on board with this non-dominant Lewis Hamilton F1. I actually enjoyed the on-track battle. It kind of helped that I wasn't really happy either way, because if Leclerc won, you'd be really happy. If Max won, then it's kind of like, well, I probably would have preferred Sainz to win.
Dominance in F1 is boring no matter who you support. Yes,
exactly.
We all want on-track battles. And so, I am hopeful. I'm not praying, but I'm hopeful. Mercedes can join this fight ASAP. Lewis can be part of this battle and he can go out and win. And if it was Hamilton versus Leclerc for a victory, I am still going to lean towards Hamilton at this point. But I do love Leclerc and I'd be very happy to see him.
Who would you back in terms of their driver ability? Ferrari in the car they've got now. Let's fast forward four races to Mercedes having a somewhat equal car to Ferrari.
Oh, I think
who would you back rather than who would you want to win?
If you've seen Leclerc, Verstappen, Hamilton in equal machinery, whoever's on their form that day. We Leclerc, Hamilton in Monza 2020?
When he 2019. Just drove off.
No, and they had that epic battle and Leclerc ended up winning, but held off Hamilton for ages.
Oh, yes, sorry.
I think Leclerc wheel to wheel is right. I put those three, and I have for a long time. I'm sure we've spoken about in this podcast, maybe on the main show. For me, those are the three. Leclerc, Verstappen, Hamilton.
Yeah.
And then I think once Hamilton goes, it's going to be interesting to see if it's Russell, Norris, Sainz, who is that sort of third contender. But those three are my standouts, you know, in any car.
Yeah.
So let's wait and see. It's early days. I say, unbelievably, in a week's time, we're going to be at Jeddah. God knows what that's going to mean.
We might have to wait quite a long time to do the podcast because it's going to take quite a long time for the cars to get round.
Oh, sorry. Okay,
or
fine. Yeah.
There might not be any cars that get round and get to the checkered
flag. I've heard they've made some changes. So we might get an actual race. Who knows?
After the checkered flag. There wasn't even a checkered flag because no one finished.
But a very exciting way to kick off the year. I think, yeah, all of our expectations were met up to.
So, I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm glad we could find a way to record this podcast. You're getting an insight into my very unfurnished apartment at the moment because we haven't really finished unpacking boxes. So yeah, anyway, there you go. It's a white wall. We've hidden them from you, Paul. We want you to be impressed. Anyway, if you've enjoyed this podcast, make sure to subscribe, turn on notifications if you're watching here on YouTube. If you want to keep following us on audio-only platforms, so that's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, really any podcast player, you can do, just hit the follow button. Leave us a review if you want. We'd love that. 5 out of 5.
Yeah,
if you feel like it. You can give
Paul
a
1 out of 5.
On Spotify, Apple Podcasts.
Give me 1 out of 5. Yeah. I'm supporting Mick Schumacher this season. I'll have you know.
You just want his money. If you want to follow Paul, he's at WallacePJW on most social media platforms. You've got a very exciting trip coming up soon.
Yes, I have.
Do I say what you... No, you got an exciting trip.
It's UK based.
Okay.
We've got a little road trip.
Mm, check that out.
And it's Aston... It's Merc powered, so I might be a bit slow.
Oh. Sucks for you. I'll be in the Ferrari coming next. If you want to follow me, I'm at Seen Through Glass on most social media platforms. Tony and I will be back with you later this week, and we'll be back with you next week.
Oh, yes.
Post Jeddah. Bye bye.
Bye.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.